This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
And we're back. This is Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Matt, guess what has been launched to space? Well, we hope that it's really finally been launched properly in space.
I know what it is, but I'm not going to spoil the surprise.
Not going to spoil the surprise. So let me say this, that KFC, yes, Kentucky Fried Chicken, and a private space flight company called Worldview, they have teamed up to send a chicken sandwich to the edge of space for a four-day trip into the stratosphere. That's about 30 miles off Earth. That's just... I don't know what to say about this. Why are we sending sandwiches to space, man? I understand that Worldview is testing out, you know, new equipments for them to, you know, send a balloon up into space, and they want to make this as like a personal transport for the future, where, you know, you could go up to space, enjoy a view, come down half an hour, that kind of style, right?
I understand all of that, and I understand that they're getting sponsorship from KFC to help them with that.
To send a Zinger chicken burger up there.
Exactly. What gets me is, you know, when Red Bull did this a couple of years ago,
ooh, that was cool.
It was really cool. It was amazing.
You know, the man jumping off from the edge of space.
And going off into the edge. But just watching a chicken sandwich slowly float up into space on a webcam, I don't think it's going to quite have the same impact.
No traction. I don't think it's going to gain that much of traction of people just, you know, logging online and like, I want to see that Zinger Burger up in space exploding.
Also, the question is the Zinger Burger they send up, is it going to look like the one in the adverts or the one that you actually get?
Yeah, well, because the one in the advert that they sort of did a mock-up of, you know, this this KFC bucket, and that has a Zinger Burger on a very nice aluminium plate with a space helmet around it. It looks amazingly fantastic, but it's obviously Photoshop. I'm not quite sure the size of that chicken sandwich is the actual size that you would probably get in the one in space.
Well, also, I wonder how stable it's going to be, because I don't know how often you sit around in a bed of mayonnaise, but it tends to be a bit slidey. So I'm not... I don't have a lot of hope that the chicken's going to stay on the lettuce and the bun for very long. Well, I think it's just going to look very, very messy very, very quickly.
Yeah. Initially, they were supposed to actually launch this yesterday. But as we speak is when they're actually sort of doing it. So we can't actually go online and just let you know what's happening. So if you just Google KFC space, you should be able to find out some information of like, did it actually manage to take off and it's everything is fine? Is the chicken Zinger Burger safe in space? You should be able to find it.
Wouldn't it be amazing if they had to abandon the launch because they couldn't power up the fryer for the chicken?
Or someone stole the Zinger Burger.
Yeah, or they just had to send a bun up.
Oh, yeah, just probably send a bun. Let's see how it happens. Actually, it'll be interesting to see what happens when the burger comes back down. Does it shrink in size, or does it grow in size, or does it spring another Zinger Burger?
Like I said, by the time it gets halfway, it's going to look like it was blended. By the time it comes down, it's just going to look like mush.
Yep. Anyways, let's talk about SIM cards, Matt. I hate them because I keep changing phones a lot of times. And, you know, even when you travel, I buy a lot of different SIM cards. And, yeah.
No, this is the weird thing. You know, we have all of this really advanced technology.
Technology, yeah.
But for some reason, our SIM cards are still these little pieces of plastic that have to be inserted by hand into our phone or
and
our computer.
And it's not changed
all these devices.
Ever since.
It hasn't, no.
Yeah. Well, the size has changed, but...
The size changes, but you still need
the mythology behind
device.
It's the same, yeah.
But we have actually had a technology called embedded SIM technology for the last few years, which allows it to be done electronically. Ah. It allows it just to be hard-coded into the device. But what stopped it from being adopted has been a lack of cross-industry specifications. Mm. So there hasn't been a broad standard to do it. There's a new version of the technology. Mm. It's called the remote SIM provisioning. And this can actually store and adapt different profiles or accounts on a single device. So you can actually swap between networks when you go abroad. And one of the nice things is when you go abroad, you won't actually have to go to a store to buy the SIM card. Because the first thing I do when I get in a place is I have to look
at my phone. Go to a convenience store, yeah.
Yeah, go to a convenience store or look for the particular telco that you need to go and buy a SIM card from. So this will actually help you to bypass that. And another cool thing about it is because you don't need to have the size of that SIM card tray, it's going to allow a lot of other devices to have kind of SIM technology embedded in them, whether it's wearables or smaller devices that don't fit a traditional size. So you're going to see a lot more devices that can connect over Bluetooth and over the 4G and 5G networks when they're introduced.
The Gear X, the Gear S3 smartwatch that I have, it actually is one of the first consumer devices to run using an eSIM, and it works absolutely great.
Like,
fantastic phone. Well, I wanted to say phone, but fantastic watch, actually. Yeah. Not really a phone,
The manufacturers are responding to it a bit faster than the telcos. Mm. So far, I think only 20 telcos globally have signed on, but there are some of the biggies.
I can see why, though. You know, it is tough, and it's so many regulations and layers, and it's a thing that has been around
really,
for so
I don't think it really is tough, because it's just something that's coded. It's the same thing. You just have to have a set of standards to make it interoperable.
Yeah.
So they've done that with roaming agreements. They've done it with so many other things. I really, really don't think it's very, very difficult at all. So I think in the near future we can all throw our SIM cards to the wind. One of the nice things it said was if you have an older device that has a SIM card tray rather than an electronic SIM on it, you can get a SIM card adapter to use the electronic SIM in your phone, which is,
now
again, the bus.
Well, I guess now we know what is the main feature in the next iPhone 10, I guess. And, you know, no SIM card tray, no headphone jacks, no charging port as well.
Yeah, in fact, it's just going to be a solid block of aluminium with no screen.
All right, we'll take a short break, but King of the Crowd is next, BFM 89.9.
Busy finding money. BFM 89.9.
And we're back. This is Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandu together with Matt Armitage. Let's talk about Amazon because they're doing something quite new with clothes. Do you shop online, Matt, for buying clothing items?
I pretty much only shop online.
We only shop online. And generally, for me, when I buy stuff, I return them. About 60% of the things that I buy, clothing, I have to return it because sizing just don't fit me that well.
Yes.
Is it the same problem for you?
Yes, I'm fat.
So Amazon realizes that, one of the ways that they can really push forward their Prime wardrobe is by letting users to try on the clothes before you buy them. And that's what they did. And it's such a simple concept because they will just mail you whatever items that you may like, and then you pick what you want and send back the ones that you don't. It's just, it's no-brainer. It's just so easy. There's no tech behind this in the sense that it's just a box that delivers to you that same tech that Amazon uses. It's the same technology that they use on what you're buying and what you don't like. And they're just utilizing every single technology that they have and launching a new product here.
Yeah, there are actually a bunch of similar services. There are things like Trunk Club, which have been operating in the States for a while.
You pay a certain fee
You pay a fee and you get sent the thing and you just pay for the items that you keep. But one of the things that I always found strange about those kind of services, those clubs, is that, those companies are having to come up with a whole distribution network. Mm. And I couldn't see how it would be economic to do that. Yes. But for a company like Amazon that already has the distribution network, this is kind of the perfect kind of service. And I really do think it's going to put a lot of retailers out of business.
Yeah.
But I think it is a great idea for people because, when you go into a store and you try things on in the changing room and the lighting there's terrible and they use weird mirrors and it's like, hey, I've suddenly become super thin and very, very tall. And then when you get home, you realize, oh, no, I'm a fat hobbit.
Yeah. It always happens to me.
Right, exactly. Always. So at least with this service, you'll get the clothes that suit a fat hobbit.
Yeah.
So you will be looking at your best.
Keeping it real, Matt Armitage. So, but the only issue I have with this is that after you try on the clothes, you can put the ones that you don't want back into the box and then, send it to the reseller. And they say you could just leave it at the front of your door and Amazon Prime Wardrobe will come with the free scheduled pickup by UPS. I'm just not sure if here in Malaysia the box is going to be there when, you know, your concierge service comes and picks it up.
I have a feeling that this service isn't going to be available in Malaysia for a while.
And also probably most other countries as well, you know. Hey, Amazon Go, remember that checkout cashier grocery store?
Yes.
That had a lot of problems as well because people were just, you know, swapping things around. And, you know, Amazon likes to think really far beyond. And the great thing about them is they actually do it. They will fail, but they do it. Then they learn.
And the thing is, the Amazon groceries, it wasn't necessarily to make money from Amazon. Yeah. It's to sort out a logistics problem. It's actually to use consumers as... not even beta testers, alpha testers, to see how the system and the inventory control system works. So actually people going in and swapping stuff and stealing from them, although wrong, is actually part of the process that they need in order to perfect the system.
Yeah. Yeah. They got to do it before they got to learn. Anyways, let's talk about King of the Crowd.
Yeah, well, I'm going to talk about electric bikes again, which we have talked about a bit in the past.
But now, this is not just a bike.
Well, no, electric bikes... tend to be very, very expensive. Yeah. If you want to get a decent one, you know, they cost generally around $1,000, $1,500 US dollars, which in Malaysian ringgit terms, 5,000, 7,000 ringgit is a lot of money. Yeah. And also, a lot of people who have bikes have already spent a lot of money on the bikes, on the frames.
Me,
and the wheels.
I'm guilty.
Yeah,
I spend way too much on my bicycle and I just, you know, can't do anything without it now because I can't upgrade. I can't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the Urban Next is actually an upgrade for your existing bicycle. It allows you to turn any bike into an electric bike. Now,
Urban Next.
Yeah, right. Urban Next. Now, there have been a few of these in the past, but usually they have a motor hub on the back wheel. So that means if you want to put it on your bike, you have to strip all the gear sprockets all of that kind of nonsense. This one is actually on the front wheel. So what you do is you buy the front wheel from Urban Next. It has the motor already in it. Mm. You can swap it in the forks of your bike. It works with disc brakes or the pads.
Nice.
So it works with any bike. So they claim that you can turn any bike into an electric bike in 60 seconds. It has a throttle control that just mounts onto your handlebars. Now, the top speed is rated at 20 miles an hour, which is about 30 kilometers an hour. It has a range of about 50 kilometers. It's not too bad for a daily commute. If you're out and about for a day cycling, you might want to buy one of the optional battery extender packs, which, again, just clip onto the outside of the wheel and double up your battery power. But the nice thing about this is actually the price. Like I said, usually these things cost, you know, $1,000 US plus. The wheel starts at $319 US, and the additional batteries are about $100 US.
Ooh.
Now, I have an electric bike, and the battery alone is $500 dollars just to buy an extra battery pack. So you can actually get a whole solution for less than the cost of the battery pack on my electric bike. It's nearly ready for delivery. They're claiming to have delivery from August. They will be shipping worldwide. So yeah, if you have a bike, you've spent a lot of money on your bike already and you're looking to go electric as well, convert your bike with a Urban Next.
And you're done.
And you're done.
You know, I was just looking at, like, you could also do it on a beach cruiser, on a BMX, on a mountain bike,
or
on a road bike.
Any kind of bike. Yeah,
any kind of bike. They've
got various different wheel sizes because it's just the hub.
I'm looking at one of the pictures that they have of this Trek mountain bike. It's kind of similar to the one I have, so maybe I might be looking at this. Matt, before we leave everyone off for their long weekend, a lot of people will also be traveling not just by cars, Matt, by airplanes, and you know we will be seeing a lot of people get stuck in airports and, you know, lugging their luggages around. What's this about them gotta keep walking faster?
Everyone has this issue from time to time. You're rushing for a plane and your suitcase is kind of wobbling behind you, and the faster you go, and eventually eventually it just falls over on its side and it's just really, really annoying. Now, a guy called Sylvain Corec Dupont at the Paris Diderot University, he wanted his students to have a look at this phenomenon of the wobbly suitcase, thinking that somebody had already done some research into this. But it turns out that nobody has actually looked into the reasons that the suitcase is
why it wobbles
and why it falls over and what you can do about it. So they used theoretical calculations. They also built a tiny model suitcase and put it on a treadmill. Again, to see how it goes from kind of, you know, trundling along to being unstable. And they found that when the wheel hits something, the whole thing kind of tilts and it begins to rock from one wheel to the other. If you're moving slowly, the suitcase doesn't tilt as far and it eventually kind of rights itself. But if you're moving fast and there's a large disruption, it rocks a lot harder and it gets harder and harder until it actually falls over. But there is actually this sweet spot in the middle. If it wobbles at just the right amount, it will keep balance and it will just keep bouncing backwards and forwards and it will keep doing that forever. Now, obviously, that doesn't happen in the real world. So what they did was come up with a solution to stop your luggage rocking.
Right.
And the answer is actually very counterintuitive. It's to speed up. So when it starts wobbling backwards and forwards, actually increase your speed because this forces it to bounce from one wheel to another faster, which means it actually rocks less. So after a while, it will actually start to even out and equilibrate itself and come back to the center. Whereas if you slow down or stop, it will actually then just tip over under its own momentum. So yeah,
that's a great advice because, you know, I hate people who walk really slow in the airports. And, you know, if everyone could just listen to this advice and just walk faster.
So the reason their suitcases are wobbling is because you're going past kicking their slow-moving suitcase.
Yeah. So anyways, enjoy the long Raya weekend. Selamat Hari Raya to all our listeners. This has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9. But before we do that, though, there is a Geek Tunes from Matt Armitage.
I thought, again, keeping with the motoring theme for today, it's a bit of an old one. This is Dashboard from Modest Mouse, all about the driving. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.